it is with great pleasure today that MediNews welcomes to this podcast the People's Democratic Party's HDP's MP and co-spokesperson for foreign affairs, Hishir Ussoy, to discuss the war motion that was passed in Turkey's parliament, a motion authorising Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to conduct cross-border military operations in Iraq and Syria for a further 2 years, was passed in the Turkish parliament this Tuesday. Soon after, it was reported that Turkey deployed 200 military vehicles in northern Syria. Whilst the representatives of the ruling Justice and Development Party, the AKP, its coalition partner, the Nationalist Movement Party, the MHP, and the opposition Good Party voted in favour, the main opposition Republican People's Party, the CHP, the People's Democratic Party, the HDP, and the Socialist Labour Party of Turkey, the TIP, voted against the motion. At MediNews, we reported that Hishir Ussoy said in his speech before the vote that there was no logic in saying that the cross-border military operations in Syria were conducted for Turkey's self-defence. To demonstrate that there was no logic to it, he referred to data provided by ACLED, an international project monitoring and analysing armed conflicts throughout the world. The attacks by Turkey in Syrian soil amounted to up to around 3,400 attacks between January 2017 and August 2020, carried out by Turkey and its proxies, he said. They say there's a security threat against us from that country, that this is the reason for all the military build-up. Mathematically, this is quite baseless, he noted. Hishir also, as we reported, challenged the claim by the Turkish administration that a military presence in Syria would serve to prevent new waves of refugees. We have refugees exactly because of our military presence there. If we don't stop this war, if Syria isn't able to rebuild itself, it would only be natural that people will be coming here. He added, "You are tearing the country of these people apart. Where do you suppose they'll go? This war motion, this policy of war, means more and more refugees coming to Turkey." Ussoy stated that the military operations under the pretense of fighting terror, both in Iraq and in Syria, were carried out with the main objective of destroying the political gains of the Kurdish people. Fighting terror in this context actually means saying, "I do not recognise the Kurdish question." And it also means saying, "Even if I do recognise it, I don't have the political will to resolve it," he said. Now that the war motion has passed, Hishir, and thank you very much for joining us on this programme, I was wondering what your party's perspectives are. I was wondering if you could just comment on just some of the following issues that come to mind. And really, this is just being used as a point of introduction to the discussions. Are you expecting a strong international reaction to this motion? Or do you think that the international community, led by the US and NATO countries, will keep silent? Turkey is, after all, a member of NATO. With the international community, led by the US and NATO countries, will they accommodate Turkey's interventions in Iraq and Syria once again, that have been described by several human rights and peace organisations as perpetrating war crimes and crimes against humanity? What are the HDP's appeals, if any, to the international community and to the public in these countries? Will Russia, do you think, keep silent on this development? Bloomberg, relying on sources, has just reported that in a tactic to prevent Moscow from openly opposing Turkey's war plans, Turkish forces may withdraw from a few areas south of the strategic M4 highway that forms Idlib's southern border in Syria, the official said. Elena Supernina, a Moscow-based Middle East analyst, told Bloomberg that even though Moscow is against such a new offensive, still, the most Russia will do is to criticise the offensive. It won't actually try to stop it from happening. That's probably enough for the Turks, she concluded, to proceed. Also, what will be the reactions, do you think, of the Syrian and Iraqi governments to this war motion being passed? Clearly, the Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria, ANES, will view this development with alarm, as will the Autonomous Administration in Sinjar and other human rights groups and civilians in Iraqi Kurdistan, where there has been an intensive ongoing military operation by the Turkish armed forces that have been accused from various quarters of having reportedly used extensive chemical warfare. And again, what of the international human rights organisations, the European Union and the European Parliament? I also just note very recently China's deputy permanent representative to the United Nations just this Wednesday targeted Turkey in his speech at the United Nations Security Council Syria session with serious accusations, including accusing Turkey of an illegal invasion of Syria. Might this be because it thought that it had to make a statement if the US or Russia might keep silent on further aggression by Turkey in Syria, given the passing of the war motion authorising Turkey's President Erdogan to conduct cross-border military operations in Iraq and Syria for a further 2 years? And again, what of the opposition in Turkey that has voiced so many concerns over such a motion being passed? Will they mobilise in different ways or together to express their opposition to the passing of this motion? What is the HDP's response now in light of the passing of the war motion? Again, we're surprised that the Republican People's Party also opposed the motion. And again, just two final points. Are these concerns that are there concerns that Erdogan will use this motion to create an intensified war atmosphere in which he may postpone or manipulate elections to his advantage? Will such a motion not increase the possibilities of even further turmoil in Turkey itself, and not just Syria and northern Iraq? Does it not threaten also to further intensify the economic crisis? Now, over to you. And just to emphasise, the above points and questions are just entry points for you to start the discussion. And once again, thank you so much for joining us to discuss these really important developments.
Okay, thank you so much, Desmond, for this opportunity. Unfortunately, the motion extended the President Erdogan's authority to send Turkish army for cross-border operations into Iraq and Syria for 2 years. I don't know how many times it was extended so far since 2014. There has been a motion on Syria, and I think since the mid-80s, actually, Turkey has been quite active militarily in Iraqi Kurdistan, in northern Iraq. So this time, in addition to the HDP, who consistently has objected to such cross-border military operations and voted against such motions in the past, now we also have the main opposition, CHP, People's Republican People's Party, who voted for the first time against this motion. And so that was a little bit, I would say, surprising. There was an expectation that the CHP would criticize the motion heavily, but at the end, they would vote for the resolution. That was a bit surprising for everybody in Turkey, I should say. But even if it is late, and even if the kind of reasons that they cite to justify their decision, some of those reasons are problematic, but still it is a step in the right direction. And now at least the CHP doesn't want to kind of share the responsibility for the kinds of atrocities that are happening in Syria, that have been happening in Syria. It's not going to change much because the resolution, the motion passed, and President Erdogan now has the authority to declare war, actually, in Syria and in Iraq. But at the same time, the CHP is an important political party. It's the main opposition. It's 25% of the population. And it is the party that is leading the opposition bloc in Turkey. So in that sense, we can actually kind of talk about a kind of a rupture here, or a rift, or a contradiction within the Turkish ruling bloc, let me put in those terms. And let's hope that the CHP will take kind of a more peaceful approach to the Kurdish issue, both at home and also in Syria and in Iraq. So that is on what the CHP is doing. The CHP, of course, they have cited 14 different reasons to justify their vote against this motion. But I think the main, the very main, or justification, the main argument is that President Erdogan may use this motion, this authority, to kind of poison the political climate in Turkey before the elections. He can declare a war in Syria and he can delay the elections, undermine them, manipulate them. I mean, this is a lot of power. You are giving all war-making powers to a single president who is also going to be the candidate for the in the presidential elections, and he will definitely try to use this against the opposition. So that was the main rationale for the CHP to oppose this motion. When it comes to the international community, there has been some criticism against Turkey in the past about Turkey's military kind of incursions into northern Syria. But to be honest, mostly the international community has turned a kind of blind eye on the kinds of atrocities that have been committed by proxy forces of Turkey, sometimes the Turkish army itself. And the reason there is, of course, mostly the refugee crisis, I would say. I mean, Syria is oftentimes equated with like millions of people on the move trying to reach European countries and Europe. They just don't like the idea of having a lot of refugees. And Turkey has been kind of keeping those people away from Europe. And the Turkey has been also threatening European countries that if they want Turkey to still keep those refugees, so then they should be okay with Turkey's military adventures in Syria, right? And that is what happened, unfortunately. The Europeans cut a deal with President Erdogan in 2016. And between 2017 and 2019, there were three different military incursions into Kurdish territories, and mostly the Western community has remained silent on this issue. And so if Erdogan wages another attack, another invasion into Syria, I don't think that much will change in the international community. There will be statements of concern that they are worried about the situation, that things should be de-escalated. You know, those kinds of standard meaningless words that they put together always in rubbish statements of concern, not even condemnation. If you remember, the NATO, the United Nations couldn't even issue a statement of condemnation when Turkey attacked Serikani and Grespi in 2019. So ultimately, they perceive Turkey as a member of the NATO, and of course, they prefer Turkey over Iran or Russia in Syria. You see, I think the logic here is, although they are unhappy with Turkey's kind of quite unexpected moves, but at the same time, I mean, they make their calculations well. Turkey is a member of the NATO. Turkey is a part of the kind of security apparatus of the West, both Europe and the United States. And although they are unhappy with President Erdogan and some of his actions, whims, and whatever, but still, I mean, they want Turkey to be the kind of regional security in the Middle East. And they have been supporting Turkey. For example, in Idlib province, which is now dominated by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is a listed terrorist organization, listed by the United States, Europe, and the United Nations, as well as Turkey. But both Turkey and the U.S. and a lot of NATO members are actually protecting Hayat Tahrir al-Sham in Idlib. That is a very bizarre situation. Turkey is protecting, a member of the NATO is protecting a terrorist organization that is dominating Idlib. Plus, the Turkish lira is used in Idlib to pay salaries of staff. It's very interesting because
that really,
you know, the United States imposed Caesar sanctions on Syria. But in order to save Idlib from those sanctions, right, and they just simply stopped using Syrian dinar, the Syrian currency, and they switched to the Turkish currency. And it seems that Turkey actually gave them bags of Turkish liras, right? So given all of these, I wouldn't expect too much from the international community. And by that specifically, now I mean the executive branches of that international community, not the people, not the parliaments, not the media. So what we have seen, if you remember, for example, when it happened in Afrin, in Serikani, in Gracipi, in all of these attacks, while Western governments mostly remained silent, they didn't do much, but Western ordinary people in the United States, even the churches were mobilized, I mean, journalists, members of parliament, members of Congress, everybody was there. They were supporting the Kurdish people there. And so I think we need to somehow distinguish between, like, on the one hand, those who are in power in the West, in the international community there, the governments or those who are affiliated with the NATO, whatever, or the European Union. That is one thing, right? That is the governing apparatus, and they mostly side with the official Turkish arguments. And yet, when you look at the people and the parliaments and the civil society and the media and academics and the general population, they are more sympathetic to the Kurdish cause and the Kurdish fight against the ISIS in Syria. So that is why, if we want a change in the kind of attitude of the international community, we really need to mobilize all of our relationships in the international community, particularly at the national parliaments, the European Parliament, the parliamentary assemblies of, like, various institutions like the NATO or the Council of Europe, as well as the civil society and the media. Of course, these are very important sites. So we need to mobilize all of these in order to have enough pressure on the governments so that we may have kind of a concrete, actual change in their attitude in case Turkey attacks Syria, which is a very likely situation, I should say. When it comes to Russia, I mean, of course, they don't care anything about rights and the law or anything. Russia has been playing Turkey against the NATO, and Turkey has been trying to play Russia against the NATO and the United States. And Turkey's main objective, main goal is to destroy the possibility of an autonomous Kurdish region in Syria. That is the main objective. And they couldn't do that with the support of the United States and the West in general. And then they switched their sides and they started kind of getting closer with Russia, who definitely is the most important international actor in Syria now, militarily as well. And yes, So cutting a deal with the Russians, they first invaded Afrin, and also they made, I mean, the Gracipi and Serikani, those areas too. In fact, the Russians were actually encouraging Turkey to move into Syrian territories, kind of as a pressure on the Kurds so that the Kurds are forced to cut a deal with Assad. Right, that is also the rationale there. And it seems that now, although Turkey wants to attack the Tal Rifat region, which is very close to Aleppo, neither Russia nor the Syrian regime or the Iranian forces there, I don't think that they will be happy with such a move, because while they are trying to kind of solve the Idlib question, I don't think that they would let Turkey to have another front very close, a military front very close to Aleppo, which is a very, very crucial site. But at the same time, the Russian authorities may actually encourage Turkey to attack some other parts. This may be Minbij or maybe some other place on the other side of the Euphrates. I mean, on the eastern side of the Euphrates, somewhere in Rojava. That is very likely. I mean, Russia can do that. But if Turkey wants to attack the other side of the Euphrates, I mean in areas close to Serekani and Grespi, then they also need to kind of negotiate with the Americans, who also have some military presence there as well. So if on this side, on the western side of the Euphrates, they need to negotiate with Russia, on the other side, they need to negotiate both with Russia and the United States, right? And so until now, the United States made it clear that they didn't want another attack, another aggression, Turkish aggression. In fact, very recently, the American authorities very openly said that Turkey's kind of military actions are making it very difficult to defeat the ISIS in Syria. This was very openly said by the White House. But at the same time, if Turkey attacks, will the Americans kind of confront Turkey? I think that is the main question. Will the NATO's leading actor, the United States, will be kind of challenging, confronting militarily another NATO member in Syria for the Kurds? That's a big question. And so we don't know really what Turkey, what Erdogan talked with President Putin and Biden when he last met them, because they were like enclosed rooms, not even ministers who were allowed into that room. We don't know really what happened there, but I can assure you that if they find enough space for another invasion, Turkey will not hesitate even for 1 second, because they want to completely wipe out the Rojava project, because they view another Kurdish region in the Middle East as the main national security threat to the very foundation, very existence of the Turkish Republic. So in that sense, they are very aggressive. And so as the HDP, we already, of course, I mean, we have always been working against Turkey's military interventions into Syria or into Iraq, because we think that, I mean, Turkey is doing all of these irrational moves in an attempt to kind of suppress the Kurdish question. But the Kurdish issue, the so-called Kurdish issue, is not based in Syria or in Iraq. There are more than 20 million Kurdish people who live within Turkey. The main Kurdish problem actually is here. It is in Turkey. So without addressing this issue, which is fundamentally an ethno-political issue, it's a political issue, it's an ethnic issue, it's a national question here. Without addressing this question in a peaceful and political way, Turkey is not going to get anything just by like invading certain territories in Rojava or in southern Kurdistan and bombing Kurdish mountains and killing some people here and there. It's not going to resolve anything. The Kurdish issue is not a military or security issue. It is fundamentally a political issue, and it should be treated as such. And there is only one way out of this vicious cycle of violence and counter-violence that we have been experiencing. Turkey needs to talk to the Kurdish movement, including Mr. Abdullah Öcalan and the PKK, and they need to negotiate their differences and try to find a kind of integrated solution to this problem, by which I mean Turkey needs to rearrange its relations, not just with Kurds in Syria or the Kurds in Iraq, but fundamentally with the Kurds who are already citizens of Turkey. So this is our approach mainly. We will try our best to oppose another invasion in Turkey in the diplomatic field, or like in our cities, in our towns, everywhere. Unfortunately, in the past, we haven't been able to, of course, stop this, although, I mean, there were forms of resistance. But we do not expect a kind of broader mobilization in Turkey, I mean, by the participation of, for example, of the CHP people,
yeah,
or you know, other Turkish people. No, I mean, like, you know, these people have, including the CHP, I mean, they have been supportive of Turkey's Kurdish policy, right? Which is like you know, criminalizing and terrorizing most of Kurdish demands in Rojava as well. So in that sense, the CHP's vote against the motion was not a particularly kind of peaceful approach to the Kurdish question. The CHP only is suspicious of the fact that Erdogan may use these authorities against the opposition, right? And so, and the CHP is not happy with Erdogan's general policy on Syria, on Assad, on Damascus, right? When it comes to the Turkish military's attacks on the Kurdish militants in Iraq, in Syria, wherever, I mean, the CHP has been fully supportive of the government. So in that sense, I think, with respect to the way they approach the Kurdish issue, there is not much difference. So the CHP voted against this motion not because they are sympathetic to the Kurdish cause or the Kurdish demands, I should say, but there are other kind of disagreements within the Turkish ruling bloc. So that is, I would say, the general situation now. But it seems that Turkey is kind of, although they have this new motion, another 2 years for military interventions, but the kind of space for Turkey to act is kind of narrowing down. Why? Because until very recently, there were kind of stark differences between the Russian and American positions in Syria. But it now seems that the Russian and American authorities are actually negotiating. It seems that they both want to kind of put an end to this conflict, to the Syrian conflict at some point. So there are all kinds of negotiations. And the Americans do not want to remove Assad anymore. But they don't want him also to be very, very powerful. That is the other issue. And so the only party now that doesn't want to end this war is Turkey. You see, Turkey doesn't want to end this war. In fact, they are trying to open new military fronts,
yes,
right? While the whole world is trying to only to deal with like Idlib a little bit to somehow resolve that issue. And then hopefully to kind of speed up the political process at the end of which there may be a kind of settlement there, with the accommodation of demands of diverse populations in Syria. And yet Turkey is still, trying to use the kind of differences both within the NATO and between the NATO and the Russia. But now it seems to me that, Russia and the United States, because they are negotiating also with the inclusion of Israel, that is also a rather recent development. And this is somehow narrowing down the kind of space of maneuver for Turkey, right? Because Turkey was using one against the other. What if both sides, they agree to kind of speed up the political process and try to kind of address this issue in a political way? That is why I think China, Russia, and the United States, almost all of them are somehow raising their voice against Turkey. Some are saying that Turkey is an occupying power, Turkey needs to leave. The Americans are saying that Turkey is complicating things on the ground. The Russians are not happy with Turkey. And that is kind of, there are these all kinds of like multiple pressures from there. Of course, Assad is not happy with the situation. And the other thing is, Syria is also kind of getting reintegrated into the international and regional community by international community. For example, very recently they were included in the Interpol, for example.
Yes.
An interesting development. And now the Syrian regime is repairing kind of their relations with the Arab League, right, with a lot of Arab countries. And in fact, the Arab countries are kind of now coming to the realization that the main reason why Turkey and Iran, two non-Arab forces in the Middle East, are so powerful in Syria, which they perceive mainly as an Arab state, right, is the fact that, there are a lot of internal conflicts within the Arab community in the Middle East. So now they are getting closer to Syria. Mostly, people now think that the Syrian war is over. Assad or somebody close to him will stay in power there. There won't be a regime change there. And even Turkey, despite all this aggression, they also know that Assad is going to stay there. Now Turkey is just trying to find a space for the kind of proxy forces that it has been feeding over the last years, last 5, 6, 7 years. And also they are trying to destroy the Rojava project.
Yes.
That is Turkey's main issue. So given I'm in this situation, I think Turkey is going to be in a much more difficult position in the future. Our main suggestion, advice to them was that there is still time and space to have an exit strategy from Syria.
Yes.
Turkey is an important country in the region. It does have a lot of institutional resources, experience, historical legacy. And if they want to, they can definitely help the peoples of Syria to stabilize their countries, to repair it, to rebuild that country. And that is going to address the refugee issue. That's going to address Turkey's security challenges as well. But if they want to, it seems that Turkey doesn't want to use its institutional means, its diplomatic means or other means for the political settlement of the question in Syria. If they don't get out of Syria now, I think in the future, in a couple of years, Turkey may be in a much more difficult situation, as the policy now is definitely not sustainable.
Well, thank you. And I think, as you say, it looks like the current coalition is totally unwilling to step down from this aggressive stance. And perhaps,
yes,
as you say, that's the key issue, that they might be afraid that, or the issue is also the opportunity, that at the elections, a new formulation may come out, which is not AKP, which mm-hmm. might recognise that to stave off total economic and social disruption within Turkey, some form uh-huh. of accommodation, some form of dialogue is absolutely essential, you know. So,
yeah.
And I can see this game, as you say, being played out. The AKP very keen to push it, because that would, you know, once you go into war mode, it's very difficult to for the opposition to mobilise, because there'll be further initiatives and actions taken to clamp down on any, you know, anti-war
yeah.
initiatives. I just hope that the US strategists, I know, as you say, they always follow their own realpolitik and their own little calculations. I just hope that they'll be aware that if they allow, this is just my own personal opinion, allow an incursion, the potential ramifications within Turkey itself, you know, are they willing to consider, and this is also for the EU Parliament or those people above the Parliament who really make the decisions. It's a high-risk strategy, isn't it? Because you're talking about millions of people from Syria, but potentially if Turkey is inflamed, which it will be if there is this major attack on Rojava and also in northern Iraq, you know, there cannot but be massive turmoil. And really, at that point, the European Union, it would be very difficult for it to come up with its calculations, with its monetary calculations, the United States with its NATO calculations, because that then just puts everything into turmoil. I'm not saying just like Afghanistan, but in a sense, what you'd be having is potentially total destabilization, where those people calculating or looking at these issues would have necessarily no idea of what the next move might be. And I'm assuming this would have all sorts of impacts on the oil market, other financial markets. And also, as you say, if there are these constant, really massive protests, my own personal opinion is that if something like this happens again, the protests in America will be even more substantive, and in Europe, than they were a few years ago, you know, when you uh-huh. had the flag of
yeah.
ISIS coming through, simply
yeah.
because I think people will see through this only in the sense that destabilization in Turkey, in Syria and Iraq is going to destabilize the United States and the EU. not just financially, but in a whole range of other ways, which you know. So, as you say, it's a really high risk situation here. And obviously,
I mean, that is true, Desmond. I mean, they may not want it. I don't think that the European and American authorities, they want anything like that. But what if Turkey does? I mean, are they going to confront Turkey? That is the question. And Turkey knows that they won't.
Yes.
They will condemn, they will criticize, they may impose some sanctions here, there. But the only thing that will deter Turkey from doing such a thing would be the presence of European or American troops on the ground, boots on the ground, right? And that is how, if you remember, that is how Trump somehow gave the green light to Turkey.
Yes.
He simply kind of withdrew. Like, not many, actually. There were only a handful of American troops there. But it was a deterrence for Turkey. Turkey didn't want to kill American soldiers. I mean, you don't kill American soldiers, right, as a member of the NATO. So that was the challenge. I mean, if the Americans want it, or the Europeans, I mean, there are practical ways of doing it. But if Turkey starts attacking those territories, and, you know, and there will be definitely resistance by Kurdish forces, maybe even by the Syrian regime, but would that be enough to stop if Turkey also has the air kind of power and, you know, through F-16s and other kind of heavy weapons if they use them as well? So in that sense, I think the United States and European countries may not be happy with it. They may even condemn or maybe impose some sanctions, which they did. I mean, the last time, 9 members of the NATO actually, they imposed sanctions. I mean, arms sales, right?
Yes.
You remember, including the UK and France and Germany too. But that's going to take some time, you see. So in that sense, I think Turkey has tested this before, and they have done it against the international community, and there were not so many big consequences. I think that's the challenge. Let's see what's going to happen, but definitely, I mean, everybody should get prepared that if Erdogan finds the opportunity, he will seize that opportunity. He will use that opportunity. And before the elections, he wants to actually kind of present himself as a hero, right? So every couple of years, he needs to attack the Kurds and somehow mobilize the Turkish racist nationalist masses there. Is it going to save him in the elections? I'm not so sure about that. That's a different issue. He invaded 3 times, right? Certain parts of Rojava, but he is now losing power. You see, I mean, that's how memory works. People forget in a couple of months. So, but definitely Erdogan will be trying to use such an invasion for electoral purposes. And we will do our best. Even if we may not be able to stop this irrational, crazy attack, but definitely there will be resistance in Turkey.
Well, really, thank you so much for giving me your time.
Appreciate
it. And it's a lot of food for thought for our listeners. So thank you so much.